Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
This is Sergeant War Dog of the War Dog Trail. Welcome to episode 20. In this episode, I'm bringing you an exclusive interview with a Marine rifleman who served not only 3 tours in Iraq, but also an additional tour in Afghanistan. At this time, I present to you Corporal Antonio Stiles.
Let's go to war, baby. Let's go to war, baby.
Skeet jeans, that's what it is.
All I know is war. All I know is shoot. All I want is more. I'm a soldier, I'm a warrior. Got a emblem on my cover. And ask me what I did for ya. I put the trash deep down under. Yeah, I'm a dog of war. Hell's what I've been through. I'm a dog of war. I did it all for you, yeah.
I was too much worried about, you know, the man fight, but it was mainly chemical, the gas, you know. That was really where my concern was, my fear was.
Now, do you ever remember a time when they reported 250 Iraqi tanks waiting at the goddamn border for us?
Yeah, I remember when they said that.
Please tell me what crossed your mind.
I ain't gonna lie, now when they said about the tank, I was kind of worried because, like I said, I was attached to the Javelin guys. So, you know, that's they thing, anti-armor. So, I was like, boy, we finna go up against some tanks. So I hope, boy, I don't have to pick up this crew. they train me on the crew on how to work the crew, but still, you know what I'm saying? These like on the fly type training, so. But I don't want to have to get put in one of them positions and fuck up, man. You know what I'm saying? Then it's on me, then. You feel?
Hell yeah. What was it like when you finally got to cross the border? You remember what you saw? What the day looked like?
Yeah, I remember crossing over Ryan, in the AAV. But, you know, we had Coleman support, so, you know, it wasn't no 250 tanks. That was the kicker right there when we actually crossed and find out, man, it ain't that really that many tanks, because we were tipping the spill, so we were the first one.
Damn right. Now, I know.
Go ahead, bro.
No, I didn't mean to cut you off. You go ahead. You start a show, Corporal.
But, you know, in hindsight, not looking at it, I feel like that was just more of a mental aspect they was playing on us to make us, you know, think that we was actually against the you know how I was playing the mental game, how they did in basic training.
Damn, I never
be bad, so you can have your war face ready, be ready to go kill everything you see.
Good point, man. I never even looked at it like that, bro. Now, I know that we all went through a bunch of cities, a bunch of villages, as much as possible without you stopping. Please, tell me what you remember about that first tour.
With the first tour, you know, as I was tasked on Javelin for support, it was during the first part up until about right before we got to Diyala. We didn't, you know, get a whole lot of contact. Now, you know, the mortarmen, they got their little mortar missions or whatever. But basically, we were just kind of security for them and kind of wrong. The Javelin's kind of wrong the line, you know, looking for, you know, little spots. But really, then, me personally, really didn't get any real contact till we got to Diyala Bridge. And, you know, Diyala Bridge, I guess, seeing our casualties, it did kind of woke some up in me, like, hold up, man, we supposed to be, you know what I'm saying, like superhuman. You know, like, you know, from that point on, shit, it was like revenge.
I gotta let you know, in a very, very serious moment, I happened to see you at the bridge after we had that artillery round fired at us, in which we lost at least two Marines KIA. Now, I don't think you saw me, but it's right after that explosion, I did get a chance to see you and Lance Corporal Welch. And the first thing coming out of both of your mouths was, after what you just experienced with that explosion and what you had to see, you were both asking for cigarettes like a motherfucker.
Yeah, I remember that. They were like, man, I need to smoke a cigarette.
You remember finally crossing the bridge and what Baghdad was like?
Crossing the bridge, once you cross the bridge, I think once we got across, we got into the first set of buildings, and we was up on the rooftop. And we had actually started getting pinned down by fire. I remember we had a couple of reporters up on the roof with us also. Yeah, I remember looking in one of the reporters' eyes, and man, all I seen was fear in his eyes, man. It was. And then, you know, it kind of felt like I was kind of had a babysit, too, because, you know, we was up on the roof, we got to do our job, and then we got these guys, we got to make sure they don't do nothing stupid to get themselves killed, because you know what I mean?
Yeah. I always felt like that would have been on us in a way, but at the same time, if they risked their neck trying to get, you know, trying to win a Pulitzer Prize for the best photo or whatnot, I actually felt some of that would have been on their ass. How about, do you remember once we actually made it to Baghdad, right? And there were Christians there? Can you tell me what it was like for you to see Christians in Baghdad?
Now, that was a shock, yeah. Now, I mean, I kind of know the history of the area. You know, the British was once there, you know, they had them colonized or whatever. They was under British control. But for it to be, you know, majority Islam, and, you know, throughout the course of the history, the relationship between Islam and Christianity, that was very surprising to find, you know, that small Christian community there.
True that.
And, you know, seeing the people that dress like, you know, might as well say normal, like, basically dressed like Americans.
Do you at all remember, because at one time we lived in a neighborhood that we came to call the Christian Circle. We've been there for maybe like 2 weeks or so. Do you remember on Easter Sunday them coming up and asking if they could go to church?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, when the chaplain had like the little church service down in the little, matter of fact, down in the little circle in the middle of the little town square with them.
Right on. Now, how did you feel once we actually lived in what they later went on to call the Green Zone, when we were living around the Sheraton and Palestine hotels right there in Baghdad, where all the Western reporters were living?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it kind of, yeah, it did feel more like a Green Zone because, you know, we were actually able, you know, kind of catch up on hygiene and stuff like that. But, you know, we still had a possible threat because, you know, we had a little checkpoint set up. So it was kind of, you know, we were kind of able to be a little at ease, but, you know, we still had to be very vigilant because, you know, they were getting bomb threats for the hotels and stuff too. So, I mean, it kind of was a shock, like, actually, when we first got to the little Christian community, walking into the hotel and hearing about the war was over, like, wow, the war over, when, ain't nobody gave up that no more, you know, we kind of shocked.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. How about did you try any Iraqi foods?
Yeah, I did try some.
How did they treat your system, your body?
I mean, of course, cause how they prepare their food, you know, we really wasn't used to it. But I mean, in my opinion, it was good. Yeah, like, you know, all the natural flavors, but, you know, knowing I know now about having a good healthy diet, that's probably why. It was actually the food probably was cleaning all the toxins out my body.
Right on. Right on. Now, how about, do you remember 20,000 Iraqis screaming at us at that hotel in the Fertile Square, screaming, "Go home, it's our home," with them mooning us?
Yeah, I remember that.
You do? How'd you feel then?
Yeah, I remember that. When I did that, I kind of, I can't really say felt a certain type of way. Cause at that point, I was like, man, I got to do my job. Cause, you know, they might have a chance to ride. So basically, you know. But I also was thinking, like, I mean, it's what y'all wanted. The Saddam is out of power now, and y'all still want to complain? You know, one of them kind of things, you know what I mean?
All right. All right. Now, after we left the Palestine and Sheraton hotels, do you remember us going to a remote location where we had our first memorial as a battalion?
Yeah, I remember that. That was Camp D. O'Neill, Camp Diarrhea.
There we go. There we go. Now, I don't know if you remember or not, but that Camp Diwania, you know, Camp Diarrhea, also, I called it Camp Shithole personally. I don't know if you remember, that is the location where I first started smoking cigarettes, because you and I lived close to each other. I mean, you know, 1st Platoon lived right next to 2nd Platoon, and for whatever reason, we slept in tents. Why your platoon slept out in the open, and your tent and my tent and your backpack happened to be like right near each other.
Yeah, I remember that. All right.
Please tell the world what it was like for you being able to come home as one of the first units after we were awarded the Presidential Unit Citation, or the PUC.
Good, because, you know, I'm part of a unit that actually went and made history. But, you know, it felt good to come back and see that it was a lot of, you know, Americans that supported the troops and, you know, thanks for our service and stuff. I mean, but I was more happy to actually finally be back home, because it was a rough ride.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Can you,
Really, that was my thing. I was just glad to be back home, man.
Did you get a chance, after we made it back to California, did you get a chance to make it back to your hometown in Macon, Georgia?
Yeah, I did.
Please tell me what that was like to come back as a war hero, a war veteran, baby.
Man, it was good to come back and see my family, because, you know, my family was worried about me, so. And I actually kind of popped up and surprised them. It was only like a few people that actually knew I was coming back. So, you know, it felt good to actually, you know, just pop up and surprise my family. You know, they, you know, threw me parties and stuff like that. You know, glad to have them home. The main thing I loved about it was actually eating grandma home cooked food.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. That's what's up. That's what's up, baby. I did get a chance to meet your grandma. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. That was when we got back from my second tour to IRA.
That's right. That's right. So I did.
Cross country.
Yeah, we did. I'm going to get to that in a second. Now, I've gone over in other episodes basically how, you know, we went home on leave. And then it surprised the hell out of me that, all right, I didn't expect us to be given red carpet treatment or for anybody to kiss our ass. But I thought that after going and doing the real thing and going to war, I kind of thought there would be a little bit of difference in respect in the way we were treated. But can you speak on that a little bit?
I hear like they say, we the sheep and the sheepdog. The sheep don't like the sheepdog when the wolf ain't around. So when the wolf come around, that's when the sheep love the sheepdog. So, you know, it was kind of a bittersweet feeling because, you know, we did have some people that respected us, but, you know, it was some people that didn't respect us, but, you know, it ain't never going to stop us from what we did. We know what we went and did, so, you know, can't nobody else take that away from us. But I feel like the people that don't respect it is the one that, you know, called another fail that we ain't going to do.
All right. I definitely feel that. I'm sorry. I might have said that wrong, though. I was actually talking to, about the way we were treated by the Marines, man. I kind of had the idea that, I mean, I know we weren't going to be like drinking buddies and totally disrespecting them, but after doing the real thing and surviving, I guess I thought we would be, I didn't expect to come back and still be treated like a private out of boot camp is what I'm saying.
I feel what you're saying, bro. But, you know, I guess that, I ain't gonna go into details about it, but you know, we serve, so we know how it is, the brainwashing. You know what I'm saying? I guess, in a way, I feel like, you know, with someone with a lot of them that was our seniors that served, you know, that was their first time going too. So, you know, a lot of them did show respect. Some of them, I believe, they just had their own personal, you know what I'm saying, gears to grind or whatever. But, I understand about being tough on the field, because even though we went and did that and we came back, you know what I'm saying, we couldn't get complacent. I get that why they kept saying, you know, complacency kills, because, yeah, we did it, but, you know, we might have to go back again, and next time we go back, ain't going to be the same. You feel what I'm saying?
Right, right. Nah,
so you... it kind of bittersweet, because, I mean, I understand to a certain point. But then I believe some of them, like I said, it was for them, it was more of a personal thing, personal issue or something.
Right on. You just mentioned something. Did you ever think that after going through all the pressure, all the tempo, all the threats of being possibly killed in Iraq that first tour, did you ever think you'd be in that position again?
Brother, I thought, you know, when we went and did that, you know, we weren't going to go. Cause I remember we had planned to go do, you know, another training evolution somewhere else, and then go pot up again. But I guess, hey, when you the best, they always going to call on you.
All right, right on, right on. All right, so.
You know, not to take away from my other brothers or anything, but, man, we had a reputation through our history, so, hey, we lived up to the reputation. They
call them. You damn right. You damn right. Now, I remember that after we came back from leave, we all did that Bridgewater package up in Northern California, the Mountain Warfare package. Mm-hmm. And then after that, we went right back to training and preparing in 29 Palms for a while. And then we took off for Okinawa, Japan. And we thought we'd be there for 7 months. We thought we would have a cushy seven months of fun and relaxing. Can you tell me what Okinawa was like to you?
Well, Okinawa, I actually love going to Okinawa. I ain't gonna lie. You know, growing up, I always kind of had an interest in Japanese culture, you know. I've always been a fan of ninjas and stuff, so it actually kind of cool actually being, you know, in the area where, they, you know, that tradition, you know, was at or, you know, originated from. So I actually like being in Okinawa.
Right on, right on.
I actually got to go around and see some sights, you know.
Now, how did you feel once they changed the orders from staying in Okinawa to going back to Iraq.
Okay, like, here we go again. No, I'm saying, like, yes, we did. Before we came to Okinawa, we did do, you know, desert warfare training, mountain warfare training. But Okinawa, this jungle warfare training, how in the hell we going to be able to train for Iraq over here? Hey, but like they say, we're dying to overcome, huh?
Oh, yeah. Now, those outside of the military don't really know, but by that second tour, we had transitioned from just being all-out warfare to kind of starting to try to win the hearts and minds of the population, of the civilians. So we transitioned into what they call SASO Ops, which was
Support and Stability Operation.
There we go. There we go. Can you talk about what it was like going from that kill mode to SASO?
Now, the first time we transitioned to it, it was kind of difficult because, you know, we were still in that war mode, even though we was back and we, you know, had on did training evolution. But, you know, it was kind of, I ain't going to say it was difficult, but, you know, it was kind of, I don't know, it was just kind of strange. And now we got to go from being on straight kill mode and not to be kind of peaceful, but still basically being like a police force, pretty much. So that's how I see it. We basically became their police force, pretty much.
All right. Now,
so, you know, it was because, you know, Marines, they're really not what we built for. You feel what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
That was kind of a, I ain't going to say it was a hard transition, but I'm trying to find the right word to use.
Like put a dog on a leash, shit.
Yeah, kind of like one of those kind of transitions. Like now we got to go from being aggressive to now we gotta be kind of like a house dog, passive and, you know.
All right.
Basically kind of like instead of being one of the dogs roaming the streets, now we got to be domesticated, kind of like.
Nah, if my memory serves me right, you had another birthday in Japan, didn't you?
Actually, the night we was leaving for Japan was actually my birthday.
Oh, right on, right on. How old did you turn then?
I turned 21 then.
All right, all right. Now, for me, I didn't even know that. I mean, I'm sorry, I do remember, because if I can recall right now, you and I went to the movies in Palm Springs before we got on that bus to take that flight. Do you remember that at all?
Yeah, I do remember that, brother. Yeah, I remember that.
All right. Now, so you turned 21 the day we were leaving California to go to Japan. I happened to turn 20 the day we were leaving Japan to go back to Iraq.
Yeah.
Now, once we left Japan, I kind of remember the flight pattern as being Japan to the Philippines to Qatar, and then Qatar to Kuwait. Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, actually, I think instead of the Philippines, I think it was actually Thailand.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. It was Thailand. Definitely, it was Thailand. All right. Now, I've gone over in other episodes that once we got back to Kuwait, we had immediate admission to get out to Haditha and that 20-story hydroelectric dam that they had out there. But before we even jump into that, I want to know if you remember a crazy night once we first got there at the Al-Asad Air Base, right? When we didn't know that there were certain units that would test fire in their convoys before they left. So tell me.
Yeah, I remember that night. Yeah, because we were rolling in on the saboteur. and they were test firing, and we all dismounted because we thought we had contact.
Yeah. Yeah. Hell yeah. What was Haditha like to you?
Haditha was... Now, when we was actually at the dam, it kind of felt like we were kind of at home a little bit because, you know, we had had good defenses around the base or whatever, around the dam or whatever. So it kind of actually felt like we was on our own personal base or whatever. But, you know, you still had, you know, the AZs there, so... Well, you had to be on top of your game, because if you didn't, you know, they were going to take you out.
The Azerbaijanis, right?
Yeah, the Azerbaijanis.
All right. Now, do you remember any of your patrols and missions throughout Haditha at all? I know there were so many.
Nah, because my squad, while we was up at Haditha, a lot of times, we either went out with PAO or the head team for the security, or we, remember the observation post we had, NAI-2?
Oh, yeah. Known area interest, NAI-2. Hell yeah. The IED-making spot.
Pretty much when we was there, it was either, going out with the head team or, you know, NAI-2.
Right on. Now, head team, you referring to the human exploitation teams, and what can you tell us what was PAO again, if you remember?
Actually, you know, my terms mixed up, because PAO, that's the base newspaper type people. My bad.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, I got my term mixed up, so, you know, I did serve, do a little term and a little time as a pole.
Hey, but that was after you had already earned all your earn stripes, and then even after that, ended up going back to Afghanistan, man. So please don't ever look down on it or joke on it in any way. I was proud of you when I was able to see you in a Hawaii newspaper saying
that was an experience in itself too. So, but you know, it was just too much downtime that I wasn't used to.
Gotcha. Now, before we jump into your time in Hawaii at all, please tell us, what do you remember about the night and the entire time that we were sent to Fallujah, because we found out what happened to the Blackwater contractors?
Nah, I actually felt excited when we heard about having to go down to Fallujah, because, like I said, it's that support and stability operation. So now it actually, we get actually get some release, what I call it. And so, I mean, I was excited about it. I ain't really know what to expect, you know, but.
All right.
Now, back on, I just top it up as, you know, experiences, some of them good experiences, some of them bad experiences, but the experiences made me the man I am today.
Do you remember much about that first battle in Fallujah, which is called Operation Vigilant Resolve? Do you remember much about going into the city?
Yeah, I do, because I remember the fire team I was in, we got split up. Half of us was support for one sniper team, and the other half of us was, you know, support for the other sniper team. So it was, because, you know, we basically had to go in and, you know, clear the building or make sure, you know, whatever net they was looking for, you know, was safe before, you know, they went in, because, you know, the weapons they had wasn't, you know, good for close quarters. So
exactly.
So, like, here we go in, but yeah, at the time, the half of the team that I was with, I was pretty much the guy. I was actually the only guy with a previous combat tour. So it was kind of like, even though I wasn't the leadership position, it felt like I had, you know, to step up too, because I'm the only one with a little bit more experience than these guys. So, you know.
All right. Now, with you being from the Dirty South like me, right? Please tell me, how did you feel knowing that you were waking up in Fallujah on Easter Sunday? compared to all of, you know, what we're used to doing on Easter Sundays back in the States.
Not going to lie to you, I'm going to go a little deep into the religion aspect, because that it was actually kind of strange to me, because it was Easter Sunday, but yet and still, I heard the mosque going off, and it was like, you know, I can understand what all they were saying, but it just, the feeling I got was like, it was a little bit more extra, so it could be a little special to them too, this same day. So it was actually kind of weird at first, but kind of enlightening too, because I didn't really know much about the religious aspect of it. So now that I, you know, did my research, and, you know, it was just kind of shocked. Because, I mean, I spent Easter Sunday, you know, in Iraq before, but it was just like, we didn't hear, you know, the first time in the Christian community, we didn't hear the mosque going off. But this time around, I'm hearing the mosque going off, so it was just kind of weird waking up that Sunday. And then, of course, you know, it happened later on that Easter Sunday, so it was, to me, it wasn't a good Sunday.
Right on.
And, you know, I'm speaking on, you know, Corporal Maya.
Exactly. Losing Corporal Daniel Meyer that day. It hit us all. Hit us all. Now, you remember at that time, Fallujah became like the hotbed for anyone that wanted a piece of the American military, right? So, you know, we had the Chechens coming in, guys from Syria, shit, Jordanians. Do you remember anything being a little more on point that second tour, as opposed to the first time where we only had to worry about the Iraqi army, which wasn't much to us?
Nah, the second time around, I'll say, yeah, it was a bit more of a challenge. Yeah, because, you know, the first time, we actually was fighting a uniformed army, so we could actually easily distinguish who the enemy was. The second time around, you know, you just got guys running around in regular clothes trying to disguise who they are. So, you know, it was kind of a little bit more challenging, because now you got to actually use your observation skills and try to distinguish who is who, because you don't want to shoot the wrong person, because then there's consequence.
Right. Right on. Right on. Now, 2 days, just 2 days after scrapping in Fallujah and Operation Vigilant Resolve, we hit the city of Al Carmel for a 14-hour firefight in which we killed at least 100 Iraqis. Please tell me what you remember about that day when we went in at 2 a.m. and didn't come out till about 4 or 5 o'clock that afternoon.
No, that day, I remember rolling in. It's, you know, crack of dawn, like you said, 02 in the morning. And I remember saying, no, I remember PsyOps playing, you know, their music or whatever. And where my platoon was positioned at, I remember we cleared the buildings right down on the outskirts, right up by the water treatment facility.
Yeah.
Around, like, when, you know, guns started coming around, I remember we all went up to the rooftop to the building. And that's all I remember all day is firefight and resupplying people with ammo, because some guys went mad, so we had to fill mads up on the fly and, you know, trying to make sure everybody got ammo, but we were still, you know, putting out a good fire. And it was a lot going on that day.
How about
had a lot of cold calls too.
Hell yeah. When we first rode into that city at 2 in the morning, right? Do you remember a Spectre gunship dropping on a car and that causing one of our 7 tons to fall into a ditch full of water?
Yeah, I remember that, because we were actually rolled past that. I remember the 7-ton, I think it was 3rd platoon, flipping over because the driver got blinded by the fire and he's on night vision goggles.
Right. Yes.
And it was a situation sucked, but it's just, I'm thankful that those was the only casualties that we had during that that contact, and none of them was fatal.
Right on. Right on. Now, maybe 2 to 3 days after we hit Karma, and I mean, we were on a roll at that time. I mean, we hit Fallujah, and we did well there. We hit Karma, and we did well there. So we were on like a war high for a good minute. I mean, we were ready to fuck anybody up and keep rolling in the name of the Marine Corps, right?
Yeah.
Now, I do remember we hit a town called Numanaya just after that, where we ended up finding a bunch of weapons caches. And then,
yeah, that was like built up town, right?
Yeah.
Like, look, I think they said it was like West of Dawn, how this Korean, I guess, scientist or whatever.
Damn, I didn't even know that part.
I can't remember. I don't know if I'm getting that mixed up with Third Deployment or not.
No, no, no. I think you're right. It's either that or I was sort of thinking about that K3 area in Haditha that also had special people of Saddam, but no, the area you're talking about.
I know exactly. We did go down to a little town. We didn't get into anything there. Like, I think he did say we found a weapon cache, but on the way rolling back, that's when they ambushed us.
Exactly. Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, I remember that day, and ODA came and helped us out.
Tell the world who ODA is, if you don't mind.
ODA is Operation Attachment Alpha, Army Special Forces. I can't disclose which Army Special Forces is. Yes, Army Special Forces.
Motherfucking right, baby. Do you also remember that ODA was in our Karma with a mission?
Yeah.
You remember what their mission was?
Yeah, I remember what their mission was.
Now, from what I remember, I was told they were supposed to clear the mosque we were taking fire from. Yet we called the Spectre gunship and blew the whole motherfucker up, right?
Yeah.
Now, from there we went, we returned back to the Haditha Dam. And I remember most of the rest of that deployment being somewhat uneventful until it was time to head back home. Is that what you remember?
Yeah, for the most part, I think my squad, because, yeah, I was still on 2nd Platoon 3rd Squad during that time. And last month or so, we ended up going out to the police station and living out there with police, with Iraqi police.
At
their little police station.
All
right,
yeah.
For the rest of the deployment. We did have, we didn't get into any, contact, but we did have, like, a couple guys actually toss, like, grenades over the wall of the police station. But we never did catch the guy.
All right. Do you remember Operation Skin Cancer?
Yeah, I remember Operation Skin Cancer.
Please tell the world. Please tell the world about that out.
Man, when we set out in the middle of the desert and set up vehicle checkpoints. At first, it was supposed to be like a 24-hour mission, but I think we ended up being out there for like 48 to 72 hours, and we ain't bringing no gear with us, so we don't have to be resupplied. Had to wait on a resupply.
All right. I need to know, do you remember at all that around that time, 1st Platoon got tasked with riding on boat missions?
Yeah, I remember that.
Did you happen to know that I was sent out on a sniper mission then with just 4 snipers and a saw gunner and a 240 gunner, Whittington?
I do recall bits and pieces of that. I think me and you had a conversation about it. You said y'all had to go check out some island out there, and it was actually a couple of enemy guys out there camping out on the island.
Yeah,
one of those sneaky squirrel type missions.
All right. Thank you, bro. I just needed somebody to confirm that for me, that I ain't pulling it out my ass. I mean, you know how it is with Stolen Valor and all the people you hear making up bullshit stories and this, that, and the third. I'm really glad that you validated that.
And they said, man, I had conversations with a couple guys, and, you know, story didn't check out because they didn't know the information, so they just pulling stuff out their ass. And, you know, I ain't never check them on it because I was like, man, it ain't even no point because I destroyed this dude right now. So, yeah. You know, because I had a couple of, that he might have served, but I believe because just, his demeanor and how he act. I don't know, you know, he could have had other issues going on that I don't know. I don't want to judge him. But just by seeing him interact out in public, you know, that he might have did serve a little time, might have got kicked out or something. And then, you know, we had some Marine Reserve not too far from here that basically they were lying about their service. And I just so happened to have a partner I served with that was actually one of their sergeants and asked him about it. Come to find out they were lying. And they were some hell wings.
Sometimes, man, sometimes. All right, I've taken up a lot of your time today, and I really appreciate you talking to us about your first two of your three tours in Iraq. And I if you don't mind, I would like to hook up with you for a second interview so you can talk about your third tour as well as your one tour in Afghanistan. Was it one tour in Afghan or was more than one?
It was just one tour in Afghanistan.
All right, all right, all right. Now, just lastly, before we end here with Corporal Antonio Stiles, U.S. Marine Rifleman, three tours in Iraq, one tour in Afghanistan, I'd like to just let the world know about that road trip that we took after all those 36-hour flights to the Middle East and the way that we really just needed a cigarette and we were tired of waiting on planes, you know, to have that cigarette break, because I remember having a few with you in Germany. I don't know if you remember that. Each time we stopped in Germany, I had to come find you because it had been a while since we had one and we all needed one. But please let the world know, what was it like for that that cross-country trip that we both took at 20 and 21 years old, all the way from California to Florida and Georgia?
Nah, that was a cool experience because, you know, actually got to drive, went coast to the other coast, and actually see, you know, just a different scenery. Man. And, you know, just with one of the boys I served with, you know, went through the fire week, you know, and it was just like a good, I say decompressing kind of time because, you know, kind of get out of that mode, that war mode, and, you know, go back home and see our family. So, yeah, that was a definitely good experience. And I do remember when we were traveling back to California, when we stopped in the, I think it was New Mexico, in a little Navajo town. And we talked to the Navajo guy.
Yeah.
And they told us in their tradition, they treat their warriors like kings.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Oh, yeah. He was even giving us the talk about how they cut the scalps off the enemies and that sort of thing. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
All right. Like I said, I did take up a lot of your time today, but it means the world to me to talk to the real guys that have been there on the ground, those that go in people's houses, those that see the real shit from the front row, who can only tell you what it's like in interviews like this.
Hey, no problem, brother. It felt good to actually kind of get some of that out. Yeah, kind of go down memory lane a little bit.
All right, brother. Simplify, thank you for your service.
Simplify, brother. You too, brother. It was an honor to serve with you, brother.
All right.
All I know is war. All I know is shoot. All I want is more. But I got some things to do. I'm a dog of war. Hell's what I've been through. I'm a dog of war. I did it all for you.
DB Radio.